Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael. We're going to be reading first the Tuesday, September 12th edition of the Midland Reporter Telegram, and then the Wednesday, September 13th edition of the MRT. From the front page of Tuesday's MRT. County Commissioners Discuss Library by Ben Schaefer, staff writer. The conversation regarding content in Midland County Public Libraries and the events that took place at the Centennial Branch continued during Monday's Commissioner's Court. Precinct 1 Commissioner Scott Ramsey expressed his dismay with the way in which the 10 people who went into Centennial Library were appointed to do so. He said that the 10 women should have been brought in front of the entire court and vetted before they were allowed to engage in the events of August 30th and September 9th. Precinct 4 Commissioner Diane Anderson, who has led the conversation surrounding content in county libraries, said that she was attempting to assist Library Director Debbie Garza in the laborious task of reading all the books in the children's and young adult sections of the library by seeking out help from community members. I asked friends to go and let's look at the books that are in the public library and see what's there, Anderson said. Anderson added that the 10 people who identified books at the library during August 30th and September 9th were not acting on behalf of Midland County, but were helping me as a commissioner to try to identify books. Again, if we want community standards to be in our libraries, we need the help to identify some of those books. Anderson said she and her group were asked to fill out volunteer forms by library personnel at some point throughout the process on August 30th. She said the plan was for the identified titles to stay in the library and be voted on by the entire commissioner's court at a later time. We will go through these books and the court will approve any books that are moved to the adult section, Anderson recalled telling library personnel August 30th. Anderson said she was not acting wrongfully by bringing her group to the library on August 30th and September 9th, and she was trying to expedite the laborious process of reading and redesigning titles in children's and young adult sections of the library. That's what the commissioner's court meetings are for, Ramsey replied. Get it on the agenda. We have a discussion, and we approve it or we disapprove it. Easy. That didn't happen. That's what we do. We live and die by policy. County Judge Terry Johnson said he was appalled that a county commissioner was asked to fill out volunteer forms at the library on August 30th. The rhetoric of unauthorized raids is doing nothing but inciting riots. It's not an unauthorized raid. She, Commissioner Anderson, went down there, Centennial Library, as a concerned citizen with other concerned citizens and wanted to see what our children were being exposed to, Johnson said. Library Director Debbie Garza said it was because of Anderson and her friends identifying themselves as volunteers that they were asked to fill out volunteer forms. In addition, after reviewing most of the books identified by the group, Garza said she did not find any content that was obscene under the Texas Penal Code and did not remove them from the shelves. She added that she is not trying to intentionally disregard the county commissioner's vote. Precinct 2 Commissioner Jeff Summers, who acknowledged that he's been fairly quiet in regard to this issue in the past, said this is a complex discussion and the county needs to come together and strengthen policies that address the problem so the county and the residents of the county can move forward. I don't think going and trying to do it with a group of your volunteers is the right way to do it. I don't think that represented this court. It didn't represent the way we wanted it to be done. I don't know if I'd call it a raid. That might be the other end of the deal, Summers said. Summers recommended that the county first exhaust and strengthen existing library policies like the reconsideration policy. I think we need to utilize the policies that we have in place currently as opposed to trying to reinvent the wheel. I think we have things in place if we could just get them to work. Like the public hearing that took place regarding this issue March 13th, many Midlanders packed into the Midland County Courthouse to voice their opinions. Some were members of the group that assisted Anderson on August 30th. Others were in favor of reclassifying library titles, and others were against it. A few of those in favor of reclassifying titles said they had tried to submit reconsideration forms to the library, and they still have not gotten a response regarding the library's decision on the book after many weeks. Midland County Democrat Party Chair Kathy Broderick said it was not the government's place to dictate what her children read. County Judge Terry Johnson asked the library director if patrons can access pornography on the library's computer. She said, "Not that I know of." Heather Reed, a Midlander, referenced Matthew chapter 8, verse 6 during her public comments. "It's better to have a millstone wrapped around your neck than to cause a little one to sin." Heather Bredemus, a Midlander who has been outspoken in her displeasure with Midland County on this issue, said Anderson was abusing her power and acted unlawfully on August 30th and September 9th by organizing her efforts. Bredemus said many of the titles identified by those on August 30th had been on the shelves for 6 to 7 years. These claims have not been verified by the Reporter-Telegram. And the reconsideration policy has been in place for more than a decade. True Light Christian Fellowship pastor Roy Smith said the library belongs to the community, and if parents in the community do not want certain material in the library, then that should be seen through. Smith added that he, as an adult, would not want to read some of the books in the children's and young adult sections of the library because of their content. The few Midlanders that said they were a part of the group on August 30th said they were following the list of books that the Texas legislature has banned in public schools to guide the kinds of content they were looking for. Two of the women who spoke that were a part of the volunteer group had backgrounds in elementary education. Ramsey said they should not change any policies at the moment, but as a county should take some time, lower the county-wide rhetoric, and come to a conclusion that helps everyone. Precinct 3 Commissioner Luis Sanchez urged the citizens in attendance to continue to voice their opinion as they move forward. MDC Board discusses future of downtown master plan. Members of the Midland Development Corporation on Monday discussed the three proposals for a downtown development master plan that were presented last month. More discussion and a decision on moving forward with the master plan is expected at the October board meeting. Board Chair Chase Gardefee noted that three from Half, Kimberly Horn, and Park Hill each had different data points. To have a master plan in general will help not just with the current investors, but with potential investors looking at downtown. To be able to say, here's the guidelines, here's the rules of the game, he said. Board member Lucy Cisnega expressed her concern about the cost of the master plan, pointing out that a number of her real estate clients are hitting the pause button because of high interest rates. "Before we spend any money on a master plan, I think we need to do more research to see if developers are ready and willing to invest in renovations without receiving incentives," she explained. She said she also wants that research to see what incentives may be made available. "I don't want to pay for something that would sit on the shelf," she said. One of the proposals mentioned spending a relatively small sum on paving and improving the alleys that lead from parking areas to downtown Midland to make them more appealing, something she supports. "Right now," she said, "there are few opportunities to draw Midlanders downtown in the evenings and on weekends. We need to create more life, then work with retailers," Cisnega said. "First, let's target the rooftops. Then we can target retailers. We also need to work on incentives. We need to be clear that it's understood we need to offer incentives. Without them, I don't see private property owners willing to spend their own money." 32nd Annual Air Show at Midland International. Midland Army Airfield Museum hosted the 32nd Annual Air Show this past weekend at Midland International Airport. Air Show 2023 was scheduled to feature MiG-17F fighter jets with a three-ship performance. The P-40 Warhawk will be featured, the featured bomber plane from World War II, and the B-25 Devil Dog as the featured bomber. Also scheduled to perform were the Homewrecker jet truck, Mike Spanky Galloway in his Extra 300 high-performance aerobatic airplane, and Matt Youngkin in his amazing Beach 18 aerobatic aircraft. More than $6.4 million needed for recycling stations. By Stuart Doreen. City of Midland leaders will decide Tuesday to accept a bid of $6,422,091.20 from Onyx General Contractors LLC of Midland for a pair of recycling stations in West and North Midland. City staff will request to award the contract for the construction of Citizen Collection Station North and Citizen Collection Station West projects. The Solid Waste Department has worked with Onyx General Contractors in the past as they've built the current Citizen Collection Station, as well as the City of Midland Landfill Facility, which includes a Citizen Collection Station, the city reported. Due to the continued growth throughout the City of Midland, Solid Waste believes it is necessary to construct two Citizen Collection Stations to better serve our residents. A previous Reporter Telegram article stated the new Midland Citizens Collection Stations will be at 6400 West Highway 80 and two-thirds of a mile north of the intersection of State Highway 349 and the Craddock Highway in Martin County, according to the Texas Department of Licensing and Regulation. The Department of Licensing and Regulation shows both projects are scheduled to start September 1st and completion dates as of March 1st, 2025. The article stated the estimated cost for the North Midland Collection Station will be $2.603 million, while the cost for the West Midland Station will be $2.55 million. The City of Midland has previously reported both recycling stations could cost as much as $6.6 million, including design. The city reported that $5,422,091.20 will be appropriated from the Solid Waste Fund unapproved fund balance. The other $1 million will be appropriated from general fund unappropriated fund balance and transferred to a project in the Sanitation Construction Fund. City Notebook. Council to decide on MPD-MFD upgrades by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. City leaders will decide on spending $2.5 million for upgrades to the Central Fire Station and Midland Police Department headquarters. The Midland City Council will look at the Public Safety Facility Improvement Project, which includes Central Fire Station Wellness Center and MPD renovations. The city has contracted Martinez Architects LP of Houston for architectural, design, and engineering services for the Central Fire Station Wellness Center and Police Department renovations, and plan to be ready for the advertisement in October, according to the council packet. Midland Police Department Chief Seth Herman stated in an agenda packet document that with these renovations, the building will continue to meet our needs for the foreseeable future, prolonging the overwhelming costs associated with new facility construction. More infrastructure improvements planned for Northwest Midland. City staff is recommending $4,753,895 to be set aside to extend a wastewater main from Golden Gate Drive to State Highway 158. The Midland City Council on Tuesday will vote on approving a contract with TEC Excavation of Midland. The city plans the funding will be appropriated from the Water and Sewer Fund Unappropriated Fund and appropriated to a project in the Water and Sewer Capital Projects Fund. Staff also recommends approval to move funds from the Engineering Services Transportation Operating Budget in the amount of $7.1 million into a project fund for the paving of Briarwood Avenue, the city reported. City responds to unnecessary euthanized animals claim. Fix West Texas says city didn't respond to attempts to save two animals last week. By Stuart Doreen, staff writer. The City of Midland is again dealing with an issue of animals dying at the Midland Animal Shelter when some believe that didn't need to take place. This weekend, reports on social media circulated that two animals died that Fix West Texas wanted to pull, as the nonprofit organization stated it had found foster homes for those dogs. Fix West Texas Executive Director Karen Patterson said the organization attempted to pull one dog on Thursday, but that an official at Midland Animal Services said the department was trying to feature the animal before handing over to rescues. Then on Friday, Fix West Texas attempted to arrange a meet and greet with two other dogs, but Patterson said the official at Midland Animal Shelter never responded. Those attempts, including communications in the morning, when the city allegedly responded with a message with all rescue pulls, would take place Monday, September 11th, and during the evening. The fosters still attempted to go up to Midland Animal Shelter on Saturday, but the two dogs had been euthanized. Saturday, he brought his dog, wanted to make sure the dogs got along reasonably and could play yard at Midland Animal Shelter, Patterson said. We have been told we can't pull on Saturdays, but that doesn't mean animals can't be adopted. The city of Midland offered the following as part of a statement on Monday. The two dogs mentioned on the most recent social media posts were picked up as strays on July 12th and August 4th. They both had been housed at MAS since they were picked up and had been available for adoption for over a month. Unfortunately, the two dogs were euthanized on September 8th, Friday. Midland Animal Services did not receive any requests from private citizens or rescues for the dogs prior to September 8th, Friday. Midland Animal Services did follow all protocols leading up to this event. Patterson added that once Fix West Texas pulls the animal and takes it out of the shelter, it doesn't bring the animal back. She hopes in the future there are improvements made with officials when a city official might not be able to be at the shelter, so foster efforts can still take place. She described getting a person to become a foster is like hitting the lottery, so some flexibility with the city and Midland Animal Shelter would be appreciated. She also said, had Midland Animal Shelter pulled the one dog on Thursday for Fix West Texas, it would have meant space would have been available for animals killed Friday, including one of the two that a foster found by Fix West Texas had interest in. Note, the Midland next meeting of the Midland Animal Advisory Board will take place at noon on September 18th at MLK Community Center, 2300 Butternut Lane. It is expected for the agenda for that meeting will be posted 72 hours before the meeting. Second note, the Reporter-Telegram is working with the City of Midland about an animal services forum with the community. More details are expected in the next week. The following is a statement from the City of Midland. Midland Animal Services Department, MAS, is committed to safeguarding public health, protecting animal welfare, and providing the community with animal care and services. MAS has a capacity limit for the number of animals we can house in the shelter to achieve that goal. The capacity limit allows MAS to remain an open intake facility to safeguard public health by getting loose dogs off of our streets. This year to date, Midland Animal Services has taken in approximately 396 animals per month, either by owner surrenders or picked up as strays. Midland Animal Services works with local rescues, committed volunteers, and the public to give all adoptable animals an opportunity to find a home. Like MAS, these rescues sometimes find themselves at capacity with the number of animals they can take. Unfortunately, some animals aren't adopted or rescued, which forces the difficult decision to euthanize the animals. This decision of which animal or when this must be done is not taken lightly by management or our shelter staff. There are several considerations while making this decision: health, behavior concerns, and time the animal has to be in the shelter. The two dogs mentioned on the most recent social media posts were picked up as strays on July 12th and August 4th. They both had been housed at MAS since they were picked up and had been available for adoption for over a month. Unfortunately, the two dogs were euthanized on September 8th. Midland Animal Services did not receive any requests from private citizens or rescues for the dogs prior to September 8th. Midland Animal Shelters, Animal Services did follow all protocols leading up to this event. New baseball park sound system could cost nearly $900,000, by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. The Midland City Council will be asked Tuesday to approve the replacement of the sound system at Momentum Bank Ballpark, the baseball stadium at the Scarborough Sports Complex. The existing sound system at the Momentum Bank ballpark needs to be replaced, the city offered in an agenda packet document. The equipment is outdated and some components and repair parts are no longer available. The existing analog audio system will be replaced with a modern digital mixing and signal processing technology. City staff is requesting $886,336 in funding, including $805,760 for the cost of the equipment with installation, freight, new cabling, and warranty. A 10% contingency, $80,576, is included in the requested funding to cover any unexpected costs that may arise during installation, the city reported. The project will involve the procurement, installation, commissioning, and replacement of equipment, including the mixing console, power systems, audio processing, amplifiers, and speaker systems, the city reported. The contract will be with Nouveau Technology Services out of Carrollton. Funds in the amount of $350,000 are available in the 2023 operating budget for the Sports Complex Fund, the city of Midland reported. The remaining $536,336 is available in the Scarborough Sports Complex Fund unappropriated fund balance and will be transferred and appropriated to a project in the Capital Projects Fund. Midlander sentenced for $1.2 million of wire and tax fraud. Judge ordered 2.5 years in prison and $1.25 million in restitution. From staff reports, a 49-year-old Midland woman was sentenced Friday in a federal court to 2.5 years in prison for wire fraud and filing a false tax return, according to the Department of Justice. Tamara Dawn Allen was also reported ordered to pay $1.251 million in restitution. Allen, while working as a secretary for Bridges Equipment LTD, fraudulently cashed her employer's checks using the owner's signature stamp and made electronic payments to her personal bank accounts from company accounts. The scheme amounted to a total loss of at least $868,770.60, according to court documents. She also underreported her income on her taxes over a four-year span for a total amount of $553,390. Allen pleaded guilty to counts 1 and 24 of a 31-count superseding indictment on May 12th, according to the Department of Justice. The fraud perpetrated by this defendant, a longtime employee at a family-owned business, resulted in substantial losses and destroyed relationships, said U.S. Attorney Jamie Esparza for the Western District of Texas. I appreciate the work of our partners for investigating this case. Just as with violent crime, we will continue to vigorously prosecute all white-collar and fraud cases in the Western District of Texas. Ms. Allen took advantage of her position to personally enrich herself at the expense of her employer and her partners, said Special Agent in Charge Douglas M. Goodwater for the FBI El Paso field office. The victims can have confidence that the defendant will be held accountable for the crimes she committed, and sends a message to other fraudsters that their schemes and deception will not be tolerated in our community. Allen spent years stealing from her employer, gaining wealth at everyone else's expense, including law-abiding taxpayers, said Special Agent in Charge Ramsey E. Covington of IRS Criminal Investigations Houston Field Office. The special agents and prosecutors rigorously documented every deceptive transaction, ensuring that the case against her was irrefutable. As experts in financial crimes, CI regularly partners with other law enforcement agencies to help ensure justice is served. Ector County, 12-year-old arrested for having handgun at school, by Mercedes Cordero, staff writer. A 12-year-old Wilson and Young middle school student was arrested Monday morning, according to Ector County ISD. This morning, as students were arriving at school, leaders at Wilson and Young Middle School received reports from several kids that they saw a student on campus with a weapon, ECISD reported. ECISD police identified and arrested the student after confirming he had a handgun in his backpack. He was charged with places weapons prohibited, a third-degree felony. School leaders want to thank the students who came forward today, ECISD said in a statement. The district also thanked the ECISD police officers and school administrators for their immediate response. The district officials want to remind parents to be aware of what their kids have in their backpacks. Paxton impeachment trial. Secret affair took a toll on office, says staffer, by Paul J. Weber, Associated Press. Austin. One of Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton's former staffers testified Monday that the Republicans' extramarital affair took a toll on employees who had to work long and odd hours because of the secret relationship that is now a factor in his impeachment trial. I told General Paxton quite bluntly, it wasn't my business who he was sleeping with, but when things bleed over into the office and into the state work, it becomes my business, said Catherine Carey, the former chief of staff at Paxton's office. The affair is part of the abuse of power and bribery charges that Texas House Republicans have made against Paxton after years of alleged scandal and corruption. If convicted, he could be banned from holding office again in Texas. His fate is in the hands of the Republican-controlled Texas Senate, where a verdict could happen as soon as this week. His wife, Angela Paxton, is a senator, but is barred from voting in the proceedings. She sat at her desk on the chamber floor while Carey described how she warned Kim Paxton that his affair carried legal and political risks. Paxton had the affair with a woman who worked for local developer Nate Paul, whose relationship with one of Texas's most powerful figures is central to the impeachment trial. Through 5 days of testimony, five of Paxton's former aides have testified how Paxton allegedly pressured them in various ways to help Paul, who was under FBI investigation, and once gave Paxton a $25,000 campaign contribution. Tony Busby, Paxton's attorney, challenged Carey on cross-examination about the importance an affair should have in an impeachment trial. Imagine if we impeached everyone in Austin who had an affair, Busby said. We'd be impeaching people for the next 100 years. Paxton, who has pleaded not guilty, is not required to be present for testimony and was again not in the Senate on Monday. Paxton was once a senator before becoming attorney general in 2015 and still has conservative allies in the chamber. Carey was the first witness in the trial, who was not one of eight former Paxton aides who reported him to the FBI in 2020. Later, Monday, a former public corruption prosecutor in the district attorney's office in Austin took the witness stand as the trial began a second week. Republican Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, who's presiding over the trial, said as the trial resumed Monday that the case was on track to go to the jury as soon as later this week. Patrick also said there will be no more days off until the trial is resolved, raising the possibility that a decision could come over the weekend. Paxton was indicted on felony security fraud charges in 2015 and has been under FBI investigation since an extraordinary revolt by his top deputies 5 years later. Mark Penley, one of those former deputies, took the witness stand first Monday and was the latest to recount allegations of Paxton pressuring them to help Paul, who had given Paxton a $25,000 campaign contribution. Paul, who was indicted in June on charges of defrauding banks, had accused FBI agents and a judge of wrongdoing. Penley said he wanted no part of it. That we would investigate a federal magistrate judge and federal prosecutors is insane, Penley said. Odessa. Intoxication manslaughter charge follows death of motorcyclist by Mercedes Cordero, staff writer. A 57-year-old motorcyclist from Odessa died Friday after being struck in Ector County, according to the Texas Department of Public Safety. DPS reported that Ismael Martinez Jr. was on a 2004 Harley-Davidson motorcycle traveling eastbound on West 16th Street in the inside lane when he was struck by a 2013 Chevrolet Silverado that was traveling westbound on West 16th Street, driving across multiple lanes. After the initial crash, a 2006 Chrysler 300 was traveling eastbound on West 16th Street and struck Martinez, who was lying in the roadway, according to DPS. Martinez was pronounced deceased at the scene. The driver of the 2013 Chevrolet Silverado, Martin Gallegos, 61, was charged with intoxication manslaughter after being treated and released from Medical Center Hospital. The accident happened at about 11:10 p.m. on West 16th Street, Farm to Market Road 3472, 4 miles west of Odessa. The crash remains under investigation. Obituaries. James A. Butch Brown III. James A. Butch Brown III, aged 77, of Midland, Texas, passed away September 8, 2023, due to complications of Alzheimer's. He was born December 13, 1945, in Knox City, Texas, to James A. Brown Jr. and Francis Wyatt Brown. He married Peggy Allen Brown in August of 1970. He is survived by his wife Peggy, daughter Tiffany Smith, and husband Stacy, brother Keith Brown, and wife Louise, nephew Crandall Freeman, sister Susan Medina, nieces Whitney Hughes and Kimberly Medina, brother-in-law Brian Allen and wife Karen, nephew Tyler Allen and wife Audrey, niece Hillary Rogers and husband Jamie, and several great nieces and nephews who will miss his genuine laughter. A celebration of life will be held Thursday, September 14th, 2023 at 11 a.m. at the Village at Manor Park South Clubhouse, 5102 Sinclair Avenue, Midland, Texas, 79707. In lieu of flowers, donations are appreciated to Alzheimer's Association, Hospice of Midland, Manor Park Vogel Unit Memory Care, or the American Cancer Society. The world is not as happy a place without his wacky humor. He will always have a place in our hearts. Lonnie Johnson, Midland. Lonnie was a building contractor, and he owned ABC Construction. He was a graduate of Lee High School, Midland College, and graduated with honors at UTPB. He married Tanya Sutton on August 20, 1994. Lonnie was preceded in death by his parents, Darnell and Marjorie Johnson, and his daughter, Star Johnson. He is survived by his wife, Tanya, son, Lonnie Johnson Jr., daughter, Emerald McGinnis, and husband, Chris, son, Saxon Johnson, and wife, Dre, and stepdaughter, Krista Bingham. He leaves behind cherished grandchildren, Alexandra, Brinley Saxon Jr., J.C. and Abby. A celebration of life will be held Thursday, September 14th from 4 to 6 p.m. at the Junior League of Midland, 902 West Dengar Avenue in Midland. Services are entrusted to Andrews Corrigal Funeral Home.
This is Christy, and I'll be reading Midland Reporter Telegram for Wednesday, September 13th, 2023. Bush visit begins PSP's talk about education. Former Florida governor to visit Midland, talk with PSP community leaders about education opportunities. By Stuart Doreen, staff writer. The Permian Strategic Partnership is ready for a conversation about education in the community, and that discussion starts Wednesday when the collection of oil and gas companies across the Permian Basin welcomes former Florida Governor Jeb Bush back to Midland. The evening event at the Petroleum Club of Midland will include an address about education from Bush and then a question and answer moderated by PSP Executive Director Tracy Bentley with Bush and former Secretary of Commerce Don Evans. Those invited to the private event include government and faith leaders in Midland and Odessa. Evans on Tuesday talked about Bush as an important voice in education for many years, and the leader who brought school choice to the forefront. Education, Evans said, borders on being at crisis level in the country. It's a national problem that, in our view, can only get solved at the local level, Evans said. It's local communities, local towns, and citizens coming together and saying, we are going to fix this. Evans talked about statistics around the region that shows only 40% of third graders reading at grade level. That's a crisis in and of itself, he said. Evans added that 2022 National Assessment of Education Progress results show Texas ranked 33rd in America in fourth grade reading and 44th in eighth grade reading. Those kind of results are unacceptable, Evans said. Evans said he believes in No Child Left Behind, strategy put into place by his former boss and Bush's brother. President George W. Bush during his first term as president. He said the Permian Strategic Partnership has committed $75 million to programs that support education from pre-K through college. The idea that any child gets left behind is not right, Evans said. It's not doing our job to educate every child that comes through this system, this area. I'm also one that comes from the school that we have high expectations. The PSP website states the organization is comprised of 22 member companies and thousands of employees across West Texas and Southeast New Mexico. Evans said those companies bring in families that have expectation of a high-quality education, and that has not been the case recently. The Texas Education Agency region that includes Midland-Odessa Region 18 is among the worst performing in the state, and Midland ISD and Ector County ISD have struggled to keep up with the top performing larger school districts in Texas. Evans talked about culture that is lacking in the region and that families see the poor performance schools and make a decision that they are not going to transfer that area. It's a big problem for the companies to attract the talent that they need to develop this amazing resource that provides this nation and the world. The resurgence of the industry created the need for the Permian Strategic Partnership to help with education, health care, housing, transportation, and other areas as needed. Evans said that resurgence includes an increase in production from 800,000 barrels a day in 2008 to 5 million barrels a day this year. It is stunning what has happened, Evans said. He added that education conversation to be held over the next few months will include discussions about outcomes, entities that support the school district in educating students in Midland, career and technical education or CTE training, and get out the vote campaigns across the region as elections take place in 2023 and 24. He said the PSP is working with school districts across the region on an energy curriculum to be used in districts to help develop workforce. He said currently two of 22 Permian counties have any kind of energy curriculum. The PSP is also going to talk about how to get more parents involved. He said a recent poll showed 92% of parents think their children are reading at grade level, so parents aren't even aware of the crisis happening in schools and sometimes with their own children. It's meant to get the community awake and say, we need to be a part of the solution, Evans said. Downtown Farmers Market leaves MUSW. The market is going back downtown. By Morgan Taylor Thomas, staff writer. The downtown Midland Farmers Market will move from the Museum of the Southwest to the old Bank of America drive-thru banking location downtown across from the courthouse at 404 North Colorado Street. Samantha Borgstedt, the organization's marketing director, said this Saturday will be the last market held on museum grounds at 1705 West Missouri Avenue. She also said the group has been working closely with the City of Midland and is looking forward to the new opportunities that will come with the move. The markets are going to be very family-friendly, a beautiful place to spend time outside, shop, support local businesses, and socialize. Borgstedt stated, there's going to be a grassy area, walking paths, shaded spots to sit, and we'll continue to add the local music and all of our vendors. Due to finalizing permits and other paperwork, an official opening date has not been set. Yet, Borgstedt says hopeful that the market will be up and running next weekend. She said their group will post on all its social media accounts with updates. Facebook at facebook.com/Midland Downtown Farmers Market. Instagram at instagram.com/MDFMTX. Midlanders gather at the Museum of the Southwest Saturday morning for their first winter farmers market. Los Lonely Boys to Play, West Texas Heritage Festival by Robin Bradshaw, staff writer. The Los Lonely Boys will perform at the West Texas Heritage Festival this year for a free concert celebrating the diversity and variety of cultures in the Permian Basin. The San Angelo natives and Grammy-winning musicians include guitarist Henry Garza, bassist JoJo Garza, and drummer Ringo Garza, who make up the three-brother band known for their Tex-Mex rock and blues, which claimed Billboard charts in the early 2000s, winning them a Grammy for the hit song Heaven. The Texas trio grew up with the sounds of Tejano and Tex-Mex music, All Music reported. Their father, Ringo Garza Sr., was a member of another sibling band, the Falcones, who played conjunto music around Texas during the 1970s and 80s. The West Texas Heritage Festival concept evolved from Basin PBS work on the documentary series Midland, Our City, Our Stories. The venue website stated, the festival's mission is to highlight the diversity in local communities while showcasing the variety of cultures and heritages in West Texas. The festival is described as a fusion of culture and will include a journey through food, art, wares, clothing, and paintings, with the Lost Lonely Boys taking the stage at 7 p.m. on September 30th. The West Texas Heritage Festival begins at 2 p.m. at Centennial Park, located at 200 West Wall Street in Midland. Midland breaks yearly sales tax record by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. The city of Midland shattered its previous record for sales tax collected during a fiscal year. The Texas comptroller showed the city of Midland ended the year with $68,369 million, which was more than $8 million greater than the previous record, $60,304 million in fiscal year 2019. The fiscal year total also was a 16.99% increase compared to last year at $58,439 million and 46.66% higher than the total in fiscal year 2021 at $46,669 million. The City of Midland also reported that the $68,369 million collected was $11,369 million over what was budgeted for fiscal year 2023. The overflow of sales tax typically goes into city's fund balance savings or it is used for capital projects. The city previously reported it's expected around $70.3 million in the savings at the end of the fiscal year. The city reported a $5.31 million collection in September, which continued the run of city is on when it comes to monthly sales tax increases. The September collection moved Midland's streak of monthly increases to 23 straight months compared to the same month during the previous year. The increase was a smaller one at 1.98%. Sales tax revenue is generated by sales tax income from 2 months prior to collection. September's collection is based on July sales. The city's fiscal year runs from October through the following September. City of Midland sales tax collection, September 2023, $5,315,164. September 2022, $5,212,048. Percent increase, 1.98%, $17,092,421. Fiscal year 2023 collection, $68,369,686. Fiscal year 2022 collection, $58,439 million. Percentage increase, 16.99%. Midland Development Corporation, September 2023, $1,328,791. Fiscal year collection, $17,092,421. Largest annual city collections, fiscal year 2023, $68.369 million. Fiscal year 2019, $60,304. Fiscal year 2022, $58.439 million. Source, City of Midland and Reporter-Telegram Archives. Nitro Espresso becomes community staple by Morgan Taylor Thomas, staff writer. A small red wooden shed sits on the Kingsway Center parking lot on Illinois Avenue. Inside, Avery Gossett and Ethan Dawson seamlessly work around each other, reaching across the miniature aisle from the espresso machine to the blender and from the refrigerator to the window. Although the couple bought the building last May, Gossett's history with the location runs deep. In high school, she mastered being a barista under the shop's original name, Blue Moose Coffee Creations. After Blue Moose sold to the grandparents of one of the Gossett's close friends, she worked for them for 6 years before being passed the reins. For the last year, the insatiable craving to rebrand sat inside Gossett and Dawson. As prominent drag racers, the duo decided to merge their two passions, ultimately creating Nitro Espresso. Within a span of 11 days, the 23 and 21-year-old repainted the business, created a new menu, and reopened to the public. It's been a lot of learning and growth and responsibilities we didn't even know we were going to have, but it's been a lot of fun, Gossett said. Along with understanding how to balance their inventory, find high-quality products, file taxes, and handle payroll, the Midland natives also found time to become a coffee and tea staple for many community members. We're really good about being personable, and we try to get to know everyone who comes to our window, Gossett explained. Some of the customers I've been serving since high school, so it's cool to have that relationship. Gossett and Dawson hope to expand their business with more locations and mobile truck for events. They can be found at Nitro Espresso at 3303 West Illinois Avenue, Suite 16, from 6 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. Monday through Friday and 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday. Cold and hot sips. With a lot of former Blue Moose customers in their returning patron count, Gossett and Dawson chose to keep specific specialty and seasonal drinks from the original menu. However, the Nitro Espresso menu carries some big hitters and fan favorites as well. Served hot in an 8, 12, 16, or 20-ounce cup, or cold in a 12, 16, or 24-ounce cup, Nitro offers more than 30 options for guests. Specialty lattes include butter beer, vanilla caramel, butterscotch, football mom, butter rum, English toffee, macaroon, almond, coconut, toasted marshmallow, pecan pie, vanilla, butter pecan, and many more. Specialty mochas range from Bob Marley, mocha, banana, coconut, and Chewbacca mocha, German chocolate cake, to avalanche, white mocha peppermint, and forget-me-not, white mocha, coconut, blueberry. Some non-coffee drinks include the Red Bull Spritzers, Turbo Charge, Red Bull Lemonade, Rat Rod, Red Bull Green Apple, Pink Slip, Red Bull Strawberry Cream, and many more. The shop also offers sugar-free syrups and milk alternatives. A full menu, including Italian soda options, can be seen at facebook.com/Nitro Espresso LLC. Overall Bites. If you look at the local businesses in town, some of the most successful, community-focused, delicious, and welcoming spots are owned and operated by Midlanders who weren't afraid to risk it all. Gossett and Dawson are no exception. We hardly saw each other for a year and a half, just working and working to save up the money to buy the shop, Gossett stated. The couple's dedication to Nitro Espresso goes beyond their own love for coffee and into their desire to create a reliable and comforting place for the community. Hard work and determination remain at the forefront of their business model, and without young, enthusiastic entrepreneurs like Avery and Ethan in our community, the Tall City would not be able to continue trends of growth. If you haven't pulled up to the Nitro Espresso window yet, you're truly missing out.
The Odessa American News for Wednesday, September the 13th. New Executive Director of Special Services finds his niche rewarding. When Ector County ISD's new Executive Director of Special Services, Mark Gabrinktuk, wanted to go into education, it seemed special education was the way to go, and he's never regretted his path. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's been a very rewarding career from the minute I started to what I'm currently doing right now, Gabrinktuk said. Originally from Cleveland, Ohio, Gabrinktuk earned his bachelor's degree in special education and physical education and a master's degree in education administration from Idaho State University and an EDS, a special education specialist, degree in education leadership from the University of Idaho. He has also had professional development training at the Harvard Graduate School of Education and graduated from the University of Southern California's Urban Superintendent Academy as part of the class of 2022. Gabrinktuk said he didn't always want to go into education. I tell people this, I've had a lot of wonderful experiences in education. I've been able to see a lot, but I'm always the first to remind people that I still have a lot to learn. Learning happens every day for me in the positions that I serve in. Before moving to Texas, he was an assistant superintendent in the Rapid City, South Dakota area schools, but he has been everything from a special education teacher to a superintendent through the years. When I was with the University of Southern California's Urban Superintendent Academy, they assigned us a mentor, and my mentor just happened to be Dr. Angelica Ramsey from Midland. At that particular time, I was looking for a superintendent position. She invited me to come to Texas to work for her to help network me into the state. After 4 weeks of my arrival, she left to go over to Fort Worth, Gabrinktuk said. Unsure of what to do next, he looked at ECISD, and knowing the background of Superintendent Scott Murray, he thought it would be a great place to land. He was the Director of Accountability and Student Performance at Midland ISD, just previous to coming to ECISD. I appreciated the way that they did the search for this position, and so that's what really attracted me to the district, Gabrinktuk said. One of the first things he does when he comes to a new organization is to try to understand the current culture, and then, if necessary, making changes for students who have disabilities. Unfortunately, there's kind of a stigma with students who have disabilities, and I believe that all students can learn. We really want to improve the learning opportunities for students with disabilities, Gabrinktuk said. The federal IDEA law, Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, was authorized in 2004 without changes. But there have been specific regulations that have changed, and there have been updates with interpretation of the law. That's where special education has changed over the years. But as far as processes and the way that schools do business, in the area of special ed, it's pretty much stayed the same since I started, Gabrinktuk said. He said there are a lot of things he would like to do to improve the department, but he is just starting to understand the culture of the office, how they work together, and how do they hold each other accountable for the results they desire. Special education is very complex, so we spend a lot of time learning about laws and regulations here and making sure that we're in compliance with those items, Gabrinktuk said. He added that Texas does a good job of meshing the state and federal laws regarding special education, but there are little intricacies that are different, but that's between the feds and the state with that. There's a little bit of difference between the states, and I've been in several different states where they've adopted their own regulations on top of the federal regulations. But the bottom line is, like, if you get into any type of due process opportunities, they always go with the federal law, Gabrinktuk said. If a special education student gets frustrated, has a meltdown, and lashes out, Gabrinktuk said IDEA is an entitlement law for students. What I mean by that is that they are different if they qualify for the program. However, special education students can be disciplined, like general education students, but there's a process that schools need to follow to get that particular point, and there's a lot of regulation that outlines that for school districts, Gabrinktuk said. About 3,500 students are served by special services, which is about 10% of the district population. Determining if a student qualifies for a special education is another process. We have a responsibility, for example, from the federal and state government, of a term called child find. If we suspect that a student has a disability, there's a process of evaluation of bringing together an ARD meeting that makes a determination of whether or not that student will qualify for services under IDEA. Also, parents can refer their student for evaluation if they feel like their student has a disability. It's generally the same type of process that they would follow that we follow within the school system, Kaprinktuk said. ARD stands for Admission, Review, and Dismissal. It is the team that meets to determine eligibility based on a full and individual evaluation report and to develop an individualized education program, or IEP, for the child, if applicable, the Texas Education website said. Teachers, administrators, and parents can refer students for special education. The state gives us a 45-day limit of having the student evaluated and getting that process started, so it's very important that we live within that timeline when we have those referrals come into us. We've really done a lot of work in trying to keep up with the referrals that we're receiving because we're receiving a lot of referrals right now, Kaprinktuk said. There was a backlog late last year of getting students tested. We're still challenged in that area. However, we are currently in the process of securing a contract that's going to help us push those evaluations quicker. We're hoping to get that contract settled in the next couple of weeks, Kaprinktuk said in a September 6th interview. A shortage of diagnosticians and psychologists has presented a challenge in the testing and evaluation process as well. That's something new that we're doing this year, is that we do have virtual diagnosticians to help us. We also, in the areas of speech and language, have virtual speech language services that are being offered. We're the first ones in the state, is my understanding, to be able to offer those services virtually, and so we're trailblazing in that particular area. We're really interested to see how that's going to work out for our students in our district, Kaprinktuk said. There are companies that will provide psychologists and diagnosticians, for example. Kaprinktuk said the district will issue a request for proposals and the companies will submit their proposals. Then what we'll do is we'll study them, do a cost analysis of those proposals, and then we'll bring a recommendation to the school board, in some cases, to say that we want to secure their services and they give us an approval, he added. Agreements have been set up with area universities to provide a pipeline for diagnosticians and others needed to help break the testing and evaluation backlog. Kaprinktuk said they are hoping this helps. We've really tried. We're trying to work really closely with those universities that are providing that pipeline. We would love to have more people, of course, be part of that process. That's what we're hoping for. It's going to be a challenge as we move forward. I think special education is going to continue to grow. We've had, for example, a change in the dyslexia law from the state of Texas. That dyslexia now is not going to be under the 504 umbrella, but now it's going to be part of IDEA. That's going to increase our numbers pretty significantly. So we're going to need all the help we can get, Kaprinktuk added. Associate Superintendent of Curriculum and Instruction, Lila Nanez, said she is glad to have Kaprinktuk on board. We conducted a national search for our new executive director to ensure our special services meet the needs of all of our students. Mark's experience is incredible. During our interview, Mark opened with a story of when he was a special education teacher and how he would go out to the workplace with his older students who were learning life skills. His sincerity was felt throughout the room and committee. Mark has been a special education teacher, a campus administrator, and a superintendent. In addition, his work at Utah State University, where he provided technical assistance and professional development to state education agencies and local districts in the Individuals with Disabilities Act, proved his experience is exactly what we needed in ECISD, Nanez said.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.